All right, good morning, everyone. I'm going to just offer a brief introduction. First of all, this Lox and Learn this morning is sort of a synthesis between our Lox and Learns that are most often sponsored in conjunction with by Karen and Jacob Lovitz in memory of Eliyahu ben Abba and Leah bas Avraham, as well as, unfortunately, more recently, Karen's brother. And remind me his complete name?
Yoshua ben Shimon Dov.
And there's much Torah learning that goes on in our shul in the zchus of these wonderful neshamos and by the generosity of Karen and Jake, including the impetus for having the siyum today, which is the Abelevitz Beis Medrash program, which over the years has sort of taken different forms. But one thing that has been continuous and consistent, or one of a couple of things that has been continuous and consistent, is the Chabura, which meets every Monday night to study Sefer HaChinuch. And that Chabura has also had some maybe different members over time, but Barry Panzer and Lazer Michli, under the able companionship and leadership of Rabbi Mendy Bornstein, have taken upon themselves to study the Sefer HaChinuch and have just reached their completion. This morning's siyum is in honor of that conclusion and is sponsored by Barry and Lazer for this amazing simcha. And everyone who is here and everyone who is not here, who is in the bulletin, is invited to join this this evening chabur, the study group on Monday evenings, to start a new cycle of Sefer HaChinuch, which is a discussion of the 613 mitzvos. Just as a little side note, the Chinuch was written, it's a pretty hefty tome, but it was written by whoever it was written by for their son, for his son who I guess he felt, you know, needed a little extra help and maybe wouldn't do so well in yeshiva. So he figured he would write this little cliff notes and would help him out. Anyway, those cliff notes is something that we spend a lot of time studying. But that's as an aside. I just want to make one point regarding siyum, and Rav Soloveitchik, as is recorded in a few different places, points out that a siyum is in some level a celebration of a completion, but really the siyum is more about the celebration of a new beginning. And he applies this and derives it from a few different places, and you can just see it very beautifully at Simchas Torah. That, you know, what we celebrate at Simchas Torah is not just the completion of what we're doing, but we immediately, you know, we don't wait till next Shabbos to start Bereishis. You know, we immediately begin the cycle anew, and which is, I think, a prescient point to think about, that endings should always really be about new beginnings, because we never end. Our journey in life is a never-ending journey. Our journey of personal growth is a never-ending journey. Our journey of study of Talmud Torah should also hopefully never be a never-ending journey, and should constantly be a celebration of commencements rather than endings. Graduations, commencements rather than graduations. There you go. So with that opening statement, I would like to call upon Barry Panzer for the remarks and a seal.
Rabbi, do you have your tablet? This is yours?
It's mine. Okay. It's recording. That's recording.
Oh, okay.
We can delay it.
No pressure.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, for joining us on this special morning. Special thanks to the rabbi and to Jake for developing the Monday Night Learning Program. We're also honored that Rabbi Schiffman will be teaching us Mitzvahs Resh Mem Gimel, which is 243. So you see, it gives the impression that we know all 613 by number, if I say it that way. Actually not. And he's going to be developing this from the Sefer HaChinuch. So there's a very interesting essay, not well known, by Rabelsky regarding the the way that people would learn in the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara. And the shiur was conducted as following. So the senior rebbeim in the yeshiva would appoint one person as the chacham. And the chacham was the expert. He was the leader. And he would say the shiur. Now, in addition to the chacham, there was also a tana. And the tana was a special role, as was the amora. So we come to think of these as three historical periods. Actually, there were three separate roles at the time of the Mishnah and the Gemara. So the Tana was the living library, because we know that the Torah Shebaal Peh was not recorded at that time. And this is the phrase in the Gemara that when we come across Tani Tana Kamei. Tani Tana Kamei means the Tana would say in front of him, in front of the Chacham, a particular Dvar Torah. So this is actually, you know, the actual roles that they were playing. The Chacham would then make a brief remark, which was loaded with all kinds of implications, but only the Chachamim would understand his brief remark. And as a result, he needed one more person to explain and elaborate, and that was the Amora. So those were the three roles, and that's the way that learning took place during that period. So for us, Rabbi Bornstein was clearly the Chacham. Mendy would quickly scan the Minchas Chinuch, which is the commentary to the Sefer HaChinuch, and often quote Gemaras that were appropriate by not only by Daf and by Amud, but in great detail. So he was clearly the Chacham. And I thought of Lazer as the Tana. Now, Lazer remembers every shiur he ever attended. So he will quote Rabbi Polin, Rabbi Goldstein, Rabbi Wolman, Rabbi Tokea, Rabbi Schiffman, Rabbi Moshe Meir Weiss. Sometimes he even quoted things I said 3 years ago, and if it sounded good, I would nod my head. And that left me to be the Amora, so I was the narrator, and I would read the text out loud. So let me say this has been, I think, for us a labor of love. The best part is that we don't say a hadran, which means we'll return, because we actually are returning, God willing, tomorrow night. And for those of you who want to join us, the two sfarim that really are the best choices are, this is the art scroll version of the Sefer HaChinuch, and the commentaries and essays are just terrific. And then there's something a little more ambitious. This is the Encyclopedia of Taryag Mitzvah. So just to give you an opening, the first mitzvah, Pru Revu, has about 100 pages. This is not complete. This is not complete, but by the time, if you join us, by the time we get there, there probably will be. So thank you very much, and hope to see you tomorrow night.
Okay. Mazel tov to everybody. Laser left? He's coming back. I assume he'll come back. So what I wanted to do this morning was sort of marry the Sefer HaChinuch Siyum to the regular Sunday morning shiur that we give on a weekly basis on the mitzvah of Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha. This is something that we would have addressed at some point in the future. I think we moved it up the timeline a little bit in order to make it more apropos for the Siyum. So one of the things we were going to do is analyze the different discussions of what the mitzvah of Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha actually entails. We're going to do that this morning. One of the ways we're going to do it for this morning, and we'll do other ways in the future, is through the eyes of the Sefer HaChinuch. But first I wanted to give you, you know, the rabbi started talking about a little bit of a background to the Sefer HaChinuch. What I have here is photocopied for you 5 pages. Those 5 pages include 2 pages, there's, you know, English and Hebrew, photocopied from, coincidentally, the Sefer HaChinuch set that we have in the Beis Medrash, which was donated by the Panzer family in the beginning of their quest to finish Sefer HaChinuch in December 31st, 2011, for the historians who want to keep a timeline for the Sefer HaChinuch Chabura. So the Panzer family donated this. It's a 5-book set that is in English and in Hebrew, and it's found in the Beis Medrash. We actually have 2 sets. So perfect for Chavrusa or Chabura learning, if those are interested. So you have here the first 2 pages are photocopied from the introduction, the foreword by the author. The 3rd page is going to be a sample mitzvah that we're going to discuss in order to better understand the mitzvah of Resh Mem Gimel 243 of Ahav L'Recha Kamocha, which is the main purpose of this shiur this morning. So just a brief foreword by the author first. And as the rabbi mentioned, the Sefer HaChinuch goes through the 613 mitzvot. As a background, so how do we know that there are 613 mitzvot? We take it for granted. Somebody counted. So that is incorrect. Nobody counted, and we'll explain why actually it's almost impossible to count. Nobody counted the mitzvot. Where do we get 613 mitzvot from? Does anywhere in the Torah, does it say that we have 613 mitzvot?
No.
Yep. No. But where? Okay, so there are hints to this idea in the Torah. It is not explicit, right? As Barrett just pointed out, im lavan garti v'taryag mitzvah shamarti, that is garti taryag is the same gematria, but that's not explicit in the Torah that Yaakov actually did that. There is no explicit reference in the Torah that there are 613 mitzvahs. It's found in the Talmudic literature, as a famous Gemara in Makos, Daf Chav Gimel, that says that there are 613 mitzvahs. Where do we get 613 mitzvahs from? So the Gematria of Torah is 611. Those are the Torah that the mitzvahs that Moshe told us. Then there are two mitzvahs, the first two of the Aseres HaDibros that came from Hashem's mouth. So the 611 plus 2 equals 613. That's not an explicit reference. In fact, there are those that argue that we shouldn't take this too literally, and it's more of an agadic, more of a legend of the Gemara, not a halachic statement that there are 613 mitzvot. Nevertheless, over the years, it has become sort of normalized when most people assume there are 613 mitzvot, and that's the end of the story. There are 613 mitzvot, which leads us to a problem. Because, as Norm pointed out, if I wanted to go get those 613 mitzvot, I would open, where would I look? I'd open up the Torah and start counting. One mitzvah, two mitzvot, three mitzvot. It's not going to happen, because the Torah does not work like that. It does not tell you, there's no little Roman numerals before the mitzvos. It's very hard to identify what the 613 mitzvos, and in fact, it was the cool thing to do back 1,000 years ago to try to argue about what fits under these 613 mitzvos. And there's tremendous arguments amongst the Rishonim and even the Geonim as to what is considered the 613 mitzvah. Some say this is a mitzvah, others argue that's not a mitzvah, rather you have to insert this is a mitzvah. And it's a whole literature in trying to identify what the 613 mitzvahs are. So that being said, when the Sefer HaChinuch tells us the 613 mitzvahs, he is one opinion as to what his 613 mitzvahs are. The Sefer HaChinuch, as we'll read in the introduction, self-proclaims not to personally pick these 613 mitzvahs. He's rather following in the footsteps mostly of the Rambam. So the Rambam did a job of putting together these 613 mitzvahs, and the Sefer HaChinuch is not inventing the wheel here. All he's doing is repackaging the Rambam. What was his goal in repackaging the Rambam? Why wasn't it good enough to just have the Rambam's count of 613 mitzvahs? Because the Rambam's count of 613 mitzvos is just that, a count of 613 mitzvos in order of the 613 mitzvos. It wasn't packaged as the Sefer HaChinuch does in terms of parsha. What basically the Sefer HaChinuch's goal was, as we'll read in a second, was to take those 613 mitzvos and tie them in to the parsha that they are found. So the Sefer HaChinuch goes through in order from starting in Bereishis. There aren't so many mitzvos in Sefer Bereishis. Sefer Shmos, it picks up a lot in terms of mitzvos. We're going to see mitzvah number 4 is found all the way later in the middle of Sefer Shmos. So there's only 3 throughout all of Bereishis. 2 or 3. We'll see in a second. 2. Repurvu and Mila. Right. Interesting, the Rambam says that the mitzvah of Mila, you don't get from Avraham. According to the Rambam, you don't follow any mitzvos based on what happened before the giving of the Torah. It's only what's written after the giving of the Torah. Either way. Okay, good. So let's jump in to see the forward, how the Sefer HaChinuch identifies what his goals are. You have here again the English and the Hebrew. This is page 1. And he basically says here, the English is divided into paragraphs. The Hebrew is more just a chunk of one paragraph. So he says here, with a little bit of humility, Ula yachshov Mayim b'sefer zeh shamachabro kavatz kol dinav b'yegio v'tur b'yunov midibrei atanoim v'amoraim. So maybe you're going to think that the person who wrote this work, i.e. the Sefer HaChinuch, went and searched all the words of the Talmudic sages, the Tanaim and the Amoraim. Ve'ilu chen haya yischayev liyosef mechaber baki b'chol pinot ha-Talmud ba'bli b'rishami b'sifra b'sifri b'tosefta. That means that this person, the writer, the author, would know all of these Talmudic sources. Lachen yodea atzmo v'chachmat malo, and he's a very smart guy. Ra'u v'barsim ha-mes l'chol ha-shamei ha-kolo. V'al yasem alach z'ashem t'mimah v'kesh t'rumiyah v'tzidiyah v'armah. Etc., etc., etc. Skip a few lines. He says, that's not what I did. I did not look in the Gemara in order to figure all of this out. Rather, what I did was I went and looked in Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi, Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon, Letova's Churim. I went to go see what the Rambam and the Rif, Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi, had to say, and they should get all of the credit. I did not, again, make this up on my own. What I did do was I organized it. So how did I organize it? So if you look in the English, it's just easier to follow. In paragraph D, said I, how can I be accepted cordially to come and serve before these great men? So surely by arranging the 613 mitzvot according to the Sidrot, the weekly portions of the written Torah read on the Sabbath in the, turn the page, synagogue. Again, that's all he did. He just repackaged it. He reorganized it. Perhaps as a result, the young will become more interested in them, giving their attention to them on Sabbaths and festival days, and will turn back from going wild in the streets of the cities, those crazy young people. If it wasn't for this book, they would go wild, you know, running around, and not even the shul. So it's good. Kids running in the shul is better than kids running around in the streets. That's what they would be doing if it wasn't for this book. The youngsters of tender age will ask one another, how many are the mitzvot in the Seder on this Sabbath? And the earth shall be full of knowledge and wise thought. So basically what he's doing, he was a youth director. He wanted to know, how can I entertain the youth on Sabbath, on Shabbos morning? So I'm going to organize the mitzvos by parsha. This way, each parsha, they'll be able to say and have a discussion amongst each other what mitzvos are found in this week's parsha. As the rabbi mentioned, he made this for his son, and the truth is we don't exactly know who wrote the Sefer HaChinuch. There's somewhat of a controversy. He never explicitly says who he is. Some attributed him to Rabbi Aaron Halevi of Barcelona. All we know is that he's from Barcelona. Others disagree. He was alive in 1235 to 1290. Others argue it was actually his brother, Pinchas ben Yosef Halevi. Either way, it was written sometime in the 13th century in Barcelona. The exact author, we're not exactly sure. Okay, so that being said, the Sefer HaChinuch doesn't just copy the Rambam, right? All he could have done, and you have tons of Sfarim these days that do this, is that you have a previous work, and the author doesn't actually do anything. They just take the previous work and reorganize it. They don't edit, they don't change, they just make it into a nicer print, or they'll change it. You know, but he doesn't just take the Rambam, copy and paste the Rambam into different parshas. He actually changes it a little bit. He has some commentary on it. He organizes it slightly different than the Rambam, besides for just in terms of the order. And what I want to do is take a brief glimpse at mitzvah number 5, page 3. Mitzvah number 5. It's double-sided. Mitzvah Shechitas HaPesach. So I chose this for a number of reasons. Number one is that it's almost Pesach, just to get everybody worried a little bit. And also, it is one of the first mitzvahs, and it's pretty straightforward and pretty simple. Just as a correction, there are three mitzvahs in the Sefer Bereishis. There's Piri of Arivia, to have children. There's Mitzvahs Mila, and there's not to eat the Gidat Nashim. Those are the three in Bereishis. Then you have the fourth is Mitzvahs Kiddush HaChodesh. And now we're on the fifth, which is Mitzvahs Shechitas HaPesach, to slaughter the Pesach offering. So let's just give, it's a nice brief glimpse as to the structure of the Sefer HaChinuch. So there's basically four paragraphs in most Sefer HaChinuch explanations of a mitzvah. There's paragraph 1, 2, 3, and 4. Actually, I did it A, B, C, and D, so we don't confuse it with the page number. A is going to be your brief definition of the mitzvah. B is going to be the misharshe ha-mitzvah, which is the root. He tries to give you a reason for the mitzvah. C is the dine ha-mitzvah. He gives you a brief overview of some of the laws of the mitzvah. And then the final paragraph, he's going to tell you who's obligated in this mitzvah. Okay? So that's the general structure of almost every single mitzvah within the Sefer Achinuch. So it's not so simple to give a definition of a mitzvah. This one is relatively simple. When we get to V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, it's not going to be so simple. So I took a simple example just so you can see how he generally does it. So what's the mitzvah of slaying the Passover offering? So lishchot b'yom yadal b'nisan ben arbaim set tamim zachar ben shana. So we should slaughter on the 14th of Nisan in the afternoon a male sheep without a blemish in its first year, or a goat, which is called the Passover offering, and it quotes to you a pasuk. And that's generally what you're going to want here, because we're talking about biblical mitzvah, so you're going to need to tie it to some pasuk. Shenemar b'shachatu oso kol kahal adas Yisrael ben arbayim. All of the Jews slaughtered it in the afternoon. V'inyan ha-mitzvah hu, so what is the mitzvah? Shemiskabsin anashim Yisrael l'chaburos v'lochim min ha-shuk o mi beisam g'di achar oset tamim zachar ben shana v'shochatin oto ba'zarat beit ha-mikdash b'yom yedal b'nisam ben arbayim. So the people gather, and they would, the substance of this priest says that people of Israel would unite into groups and take from the market or from their home either a male goat or a sheep unblemished in its first year. They would have it slain ritually in the forecourt of the Holy Temple on the 14th of Nisan in the afternoon. Afterwards, in the evening, they would eat it among all of them after their meal, for its law is that it be eaten in when you're full, after the meal. So basically, all this is a brief glimpse at what the mitzvah is, and the main source is going to be the pasuk. Sometimes there are rabbinic explanations of the pasuk that will get thrown into the definition, because sometimes when the rabbis are explaining a pasuk, they're explaining to us the biblical mitzvah. It's not just because a rabbi says it doesn't mean it's a rabbinic statement, it's a rabbinic mitzvah. A rabbi could be explaining what the biblical mitzvah is. So in general, what you're going to have here is a pretty straightforward overview of the mitzvah. This one's pretty straight, because it's a pasuk, and the pasuk is pretty explicit. Now, we'll see how that contrasts with V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha in a moment. So that's paragraph A, the introduction. Paragraph B is Misharshei HaMitzvah. So the Misharshei Mitzvah zu, k'dei sheyizkru ha'yehudim la'olam ha'nisim ha'gedolim sh'asu lahem Hashem b'yetzias Mitzrayim. What's the purpose of this mitzvah? That the Jews remember all the miracles that Hashem did for them in Egypt. And there's going to be a lot of mitzvos that are tied to Pesach. And the Sefer Achinuch is going to keep tying it back. What's the goal of this mitzvah? So we remember all the miracles that Hashem did when He took us out of Mitzrayim. That's the goal of most of the Pesach mitzvos. And part of the, when people learn the Sefer Achinuch, one of the things that they love to do is to look how He explains the Misharshei HaMitzvah. What is the goal of this mitzvah? That's not only from the Rambam. He uses creativity in that. Sometimes he has his own explanations as to what the purpose of the mitzvah is. And some of them are very fascinating. We spoke about it in the past, in the V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha shirim, where he introduces his concept of acharei ha'pu'lot nimshachim halevavos, that the part of the reason for many mitzvos is that through the actions of the mitzvos, our heart is drawn. So that meaning the goal of the mitzvah is to have an emotional feeling, or to orient ourselves to the ways of God, and the way of doing that is by giving us actions to perform. So he over and over again goes back to that rule to explain a lot of different mitzvot. So that's not something that he necessarily just took from the Rambam. That was his own explanation. So again, here he's inserting, he has the chance to insert some of his own thoughts. It's not just, as he said in the introduction, that I'm copying the Rambam. He's not. He's being humble there. There is a lot of initiative and creativity that he is inserting into the Sefer Achinuch as well. So that's paragraph B, the Misharshei HaMitzvah. Paragraph C is where he just brings in some laws related to the mitzvah. Dinei HaMitzvah, kegon zman shlitaso bayom emas, v'shu nishchat b'shalosh kitos ba'zara, v'chidokhin shabbos alav. He's giving you brief highlights of some of the halakhic topics that relate to this mitzvah. When do you shecht it? Right, that it's shechted in three different groups. Whether or not it, Shabbos is pushed off in order to perform this mitzvah. V'dinei minuyav, how the people are counted into the groups. V'kriyas ha-halal, and the fact that we read halal when we eat the korban pesach. V'tkiyas hatzotzos, and the fact that we blow trumpets. V'yeser prateh, and all other details. Mivuarim v'mesachas psachim. He references it for you. He doesn't go through all the details. He doesn't go through all the details in each mitzvah. He just gives you a brief, like, highlights, overview of what you should be looking for when you go look in the Gemara Pesachim. So his goal is not to be comprehensive in terms of the dini on mitzvah. Some mitzvahs he'll elaborate more, some mitzvahs he'll elaborate less. Here he's just giving you the overview. Okay, now, the next paragraph is noheges, right? Where is it in place? Some mitzvahs only apply to men, some only apply to women, some apply to both, some only apply to kohanim, some only apply in certain places in Eretz Yisrael. So he's going to want to tell you, who is this mitzvah for? Right, which gets back to that Agadata of Yaakov, Taryag Mitzvah Shamarti. How did he fulfill all the 613 mitzvahs? Was he a Kohen? Was he, did he go to the mikvah after he, there's some things that he just didn't do because they weren't applicable to him. So it gets to the idea of that maybe that's not necessarily meant to be taken 100% literally. But either way, here the Sefer Achinuch in the last paragraph says, V'noheges b'schar munekevos b'zman abayis. So this applies for men and women in the time when the Beis HaMikdash was around. Nowadays, we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. We don't shech the Korban Pesach. And he tells you the consequence if you do not do it, then you are chayav kares if you don't do it on purpose. If your shogeg ain't maybe korban, if you do it by accident, lafishu echad. I guess accident is the wrong word. Unintentionally, lafishu echad b'shloshah chatan shidis donan kares v'nishkasam chatas v'hinzeh megad v'batal mila. So this is one of the three sins whose intentional violation is punished by kares, but whose unintentional violation does not require a chatas. Usually, if something gets you kares for doing it on purpose, then if you do it unintentionally, you're going to have to bring a korban chatas. This is an exception to that rule. You do not have to bring a korban if you don't bring it by accident. Okay, so here's your brief overview, your basic outline of what the Sefer Achinuch does. He gives you an introduction to the mitzvah, he tells you the root of the mitzvah, he tells you some brief laws of the mitzvah, and he tells you to whom this mitzvah and to when this mitzvah is applicable. With that in mind, let's flip the page to the showcase for today, Mitzvah B'Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha. So this is Mitzvah Resh Mem Gimel, 243. Remember how clear it was, how explicit and straightforward. You have a pasuk that means something, not page 243, Mitzvah 243, it's page 4. It's double-sided. We've got 3 and then 4. Keep flipping. We'll find it eventually. Yeah, on the Sefer Achinuch page proper, it's page 88 and 89. You got it? Or is it a defective copy? Okay, we got it. Okay. So, you have the same structure, if you just glimpse at the English, A, B, C, D. You have your introduction, you have your shoresh, you have your dinei mitzvah, and you have your noheges when it's applicable. But, again, for V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha, it's going to be a little bit less clear, just as a background. So what does the mitzvah V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha entail? What does it mean? What does it mean? Let's do something to translate it. What does it mean? Okay, good. Love your neighbors as much as love yourself. What does that mean? Well, this is a very important mitzvah.
What is love?
This is a Zek Halal Gobel B'Torah. This is
What is love?
Okay. Okay, so it is such an important mitzvah, and the truth is we don't really know what it means. What does it mean to love your fellow like you love yourself? So if you come to the Shirim, so maybe you have a little bit of a better understanding of what it is. But otherwise, what does V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha mean? Love your fellow like you love yourself. What does that mean, like yourself? What does it mean, love? What do I actually have to do? Is there something I have to do? Maybe I don't have to do anything. Maybe it's something I don't do. Right? So there's gigantic dispute as to how to understand the mitzvah of V'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha. Some say, and we mentioned this in one of our first shiurim, that the whole mitzvah doesn't require us to actively do anything. The whole mitzvah in totality is to make us not do something mean to somebody else. If I don't want it to happen to myself, I won't do it to somebody else. But according to those opinions, the mitzvah doesn't actually require you to do anything specific. So the love is expressed through not hurting. So that's one view within the Marsha said that in the Chorim. You find it in earlier sources as well. How else can we understand this mitzvah? To love, yeah?
You put yourself in that position and then you do to them what you would have them do to you.
Okay, so you empathize with them, you put yourself in their position, and then you're saying you actually have to do something to help them.
No, you have to do it yourself to understand what the position is, and then you know what to do.
Do you have to do anything?
Depends how you come out of this argument with yourself.
Okay, so step number one is to empathize with them, figure out what they, do they need anything, what do they need, and then perhaps if they need something, and maybe you can't provide that, but if you could provide that, then provide that need for them. Okay, good.
It's a more passive type of attitude. It's not an active, it's more restrained.
So you're saying don't hurt them?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Anybody else? Yeah.
The emotions are not doing something. That's why it's an emotion, something you feel, but you don't do.
Okay, good. So if you're just going to translate vahavta as an emotion to love, then maybe love doesn't require you to do anything. Okay? Maybe love does. I don't know. I guess you could debate that. But as if it's just commanding an emotion, you could make that argument. The pasuk just says emotion, right? Love. So if maybe it's just commanding an emotion. So I could feel that emotion. I don't have to do anything. I'll just feel the emotion. I'll step in their shoes. I'll feel terrible for them, but I'll let them suffer. Does it? I love them. Okay. So basically what you have here is a few different approaches. Sure, add as many as you want.
Be happy when something good happens to your friend the same way you should be happy with, you would be happy.
Okay, good. So feel just happy. What about sad? Meaning if they're sad, should I feel sad? Okay, but if something bad happens to you, so I should be sad the same way. Okay, so that's again an emotion. I don't necessarily have to do anything. So what we have here is a few different approaches. You can either say v'hatzor echa kamocha is just an emotion. You're happy, I should be happy, or I should try to feel that happiness or that sadness. V'hatzor echa kamocha could be an emotion that leads to action. V'hatzor echa kamocha could just be don't hurt. And there's another one floating around here. I don't think we actually said it. Is that maybe the Torah doesn't actually command emotions. And even though the word is v'ahavta, to love, it's not actually telling us to feel an emotion. It's telling us to just act. So when it says love, it doesn't mean love per se. It means do things that you would associate with love. So I might not feel love for you, right? Let's say I try to empathize with you, and I just can't do it. I just can't do it. I have some sort of emotional disability. I can't empathize with you, right? There's a fancy word for that. I forgot what it is. If you can't feel emotions. Dr. Pants might know. Whatever. So you can't feel. Let's say I can't feel emotions. So I can't fulfill v'ahavta echa kamocha. So maybe the mitzvah is no. Maybe the mitzvah is forget about emotions. The mitzvah is just to do actions to help somebody who needs help, regardless of not whether or not I feel the emotion or not. That's not exactly what you were saying.
But maybe
I don't have to. It takes time, effort, and a lot of work to feel somebody else's pain and to empathize with them. It's a hard for some people. You know, some people do it more, it's more readily available for some people to do. So other people, it's more difficult. So, again, if there's two components, and for some people, it's easier to feel the emotion and then not do anything. So it could be that the mitzvah does require both. Or again, what I'm suggesting is that maybe it requires only an emotion, maybe it requires only action. And there are different opinions, and we haven't gone through this yet, and we'll do this in future shiurim, as to where all of these fall on the, you know, as to what the mitzvah actually is. With this in mind, as you can notice, is that the mitzvah, v'ahavta l'echa kamocha, the actual words aren't as clear as slaughter the Korban Pesach on the 14th in the afternoon. Right? So now the Sefer HaChinuch has to give you a definition of what the mitzvah v'ahavta l'echa kamocha is. But it's not so straightforward. You can't just say it's a mitzvah of v'ahavta l'echa kamocha because it says v'ahavta l'echa kamocha. That's not a definition. That's just quoting the pasuk. So what is his definition of v'ahavta l'echa kamocha going to be? So if I'm the Sefer HaChinuch and I have to give you a definition, so where am I going to look? If it's not so clear in the Pesukim, where am I going to look? Okay, so number one, I would have said, is to start looking in the Gemaras, looking in the Talmudic statements of the, you know, the earlier rabbis. As you notice from the beginning, he said, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to quote from the Rambam. So I don't know if he really meant that, and he didn't. You know, I'm sure he knew many Talmudic statements as well. But he says, I'm just going to quote from the Rambam. So he might just go and copy and paste what the Rambam says. But remember, the Rambam's also going to have the same issue. The Rambam's going to have this pasuk that's not so clear. And so where's the Rambam going to look when he wants to give you a definition of Ahav L'Rechah Kamocha? So he's going to look in the Gemara. He's going to look in the Midrashim. He's going to look as to what the mitzvah actually means. So how many times does the concept of Ahav L'Rechah Kamocha come up in the Gemara? You think Zekal Gadol B'Torah, this should be all over the place, right? It's not. It's actually very rare. And we'll do this in a future shiur, the times where the Gemara actually quotes the mitzvah of Ahav L'Rechah Kamocha are very strange. They're very out there, and they're not that clear as to, oh, I'll look at these Gemaras and I'll get a clear definition of what Ahav L'Rechah Kamocha is. They're a little bit ambiguous. One example, there's a mitzvah, there's a mitzvah to do kedushin, right, to betroth a woman for a man. So the mitzvah, you're allowed to send a shaliach to go do it. You can send a messenger to go, you know, betroth that woman for you. But the Gemara says it's better not to do that. Why is it better not to do that? Because maybe you never met her before, so you're about to get married to her. Maybe you're not going to like her so much. Right? And then if that's true, you're going to be in violation of the mitzvah of Ahavta L'Rechah Kamocha. Okay, so again, it's we're not doing this now. We're not going to go through all the Gemaras now. But the point is that it's not that clear exactly what the mitzvah entails. And it's not just like, there's not a perek of Ahav L'Rechah Kamocha, a chapter in a Gemara on Ahav L'Rechah Kamocha that goes into complete detail as to what I need to do to fulfill a mitzvah of Ahav L'Rechah Kamocha, in contrast to mitzvos like, you know, shechting the Korban Pesach, which is treated in great detail. So in order to get a definition of Ahav L'Rechah Kamocha, it's no easy task. And since there is no clear Gemaras on it, and there's no clear rabbinic statements on it, what's going to end up happening is when later rabbis are going to go and try to define it, you're going to get a lot of disputes and machlokeses, because it's not, I mean, even if there were earlier statements, you'd probably get a lot of disputes as well. But here, there's more room for disputes, and there's less room to actually argue. Right? You can basically say what you want, as long as you have some, you know, some backing for it, and sometimes you don't even need a backing for it, because there's not much there to work with. So I want to define the mitzvah of Ahav L'Rechah Kamocha. How am I going to do it? What am I going to do? So let's see what the Sefer HaChinuch does, and keep in mind those different possibilities that we tried to bring out a few minutes ago. So Reish Mem Gimel, the mitzvah of Ahav L'Rechah Kamocha, Leho Kol Echad Yisrael Ahavas Nafesh. To love every Israelite with ahavas nafesh, as they translate here, the Feldheim does, a profound affection. So I'm not exactly sure what ahavas nafesh means, a love of the soul. If you translate it literally, they say profound affection. Again, I'm not even clear on exactly what the definition of that is, but it sounds like there's some emotion involved there. Sounds like it. Kolomar, but he gives you a definition a little bit better. Shenachmol al Yisrael va'al mamono kemosha adam chomel al atzmo umamono, which is to say that we are concerned about an Israelite and his property, his money, as a man is concerned about himself and his property. So he translates here nachmol as concerned about. How would you translate the word nachmol? Compassion. In fact, you look in the footnote here, footnote 1 on the bottom, it says literally to have compassion. So, I'm not sure why they change that from have compassion on to be concerned about, but they do. So, not to lose sight of the translation doesn't necessarily mean what the original words mean. So, nachmol, to have compassion on an Israelite, so on a person, and on his money, like you have compassion or concerned about your own person and your own money, shenamar, and here's the pasuk, v'ahavt l'rechah kamocha. But again, if I just had v'ahavt l'rechah kamocha, I wouldn't necessarily come to that definition of have compassion on that person and on their money. Okay, let's keep going. V'amru zichronam l'bracha. So now he's going to quote some rabbinic statements. Da'alach sani l'chavrach lo sabbos. So this is from the Gemara in Shabbos. We've seen in previous shiurim, and this is the first explanation we gave. What is hateful to you, don't do to your friend. So that's a negative statement. That's the don't hurt. So notice how that's there. We'll sort of analyze this in a few moments. Let's keep going. Vamru b'sifrei, he quotes another rabbinic statement. Amar Rabbi Akiva, zek klal gadol b'Torah. Okay, zek klal gadol b'Torah. What does that mean? Okay, well, how do they translate it?
Great principle.
This is a great principle in the Torah. What does that mean? It's a great principle in the Torah. What does that statement mean? We say it all the time. What does it mean?
That something is derived from God.
Okay, good. So you're it's going to be what he says. If you would have asked me what a great principle of Torah means, I would have just said it's very important, right? It's a very important mitzvah. Zeh klal gadol b'Torah. But as John points out, the Sefer HaChinuch doesn't say that. Sefer HaChinuch says kilomar shaharbei mitzvos shebetorah tluyim b'kach. It's sort of all their mitzvos are dependent on this mitzvah. It's a klal. It's a general principle that there are other little things that are dependent on this general principle. Okay, so the general great principle in the Torah doesn't mean it's important. Could mean that too, but it means that there's a lot of things that are dependent on it.
Rabbi, we're not supposed to judge mitzvot which are more important, which are less important. That's another rule we have.
And per chaotic. Right, but
equally, you know.
Right, so you're right. Maybe my original assumption was incorrect for that reason. There aren't. You do have statements that some mitzvahs are more important than others, but we'll do that a separate. Yeah. But you do have a statement that says that you shouldn't think about mitzvahs in that fashion. But there are statements that sort of contradict that. Maybe for a different time, we'll analyze that on its own. Let's keep going. Sha'ol chaver. So why is it that this is a principle in the Torah that other mitzvahs are dependent on it? Sha'ol chaver kenafsho lo yignov mamono. So what things wouldn't you do if you love your fellow like yourself? So it's always fun when you get some strange examples. So you wouldn't, if you loved him like yourself, you wouldn't steal from him. You wouldn't commit adultery with his wife. I hope you wouldn't do that even if you didn't love him like yourself. You're not going to cause him any harm. If you loved him like you loved yourself, you wouldn't cause him any harm. That seems to be defining it again from that principle of don't cause him any harm. If you loved him, you wouldn't cause him any harm. And there are lots of other mitzvahs that if you love your fellow, like basically any mitzvah of causing somebody harm will be tied into this mitzvah of Atzlurecha Kamocha. And there are those that say that anytime you cause somebody harm, there's unless it's a mitzvah to cause, not don't cause damage to his property. So you cause damage to his property. So not only are you violating the mitzvah of causing damage to his property, you're also violating this mitzvah of this positive commandment of Atzlurecha Kamocha. So it's a double whammy. You're doing two different things. That's what Zeh Klal Gadol b'Torah means. Okay, so from here you have his original definition seems to have two parts to it. It has this emotion, Avos Nafesh, but it also seems to focus, and it sort of shifts from that concept of Avos Nafesh, that emotion, to what does that mean? Not to cause him any harm. It's a little bit ambiguous. It's a little bit unclear about how he would define the mitzvah, whether it's emotion and not causing harm or just not causing harm. And there are debates about how to understand it. But he does say Avos Nafesh. He does use that emotion term, so it seems that there's at least both. But he hasn't said anything so far about what? There's emotion and then there's not doing harm. What hasn't he mentioned?
Options.
Doing anything positive to that person. Right? If you loved him, you wouldn't commit adultery with his wife. Okay, but if you loved him, would you help him if he needs help? So he didn't mention anything like that. So let's keep going. So that's in terms of definition. Shorish ha-mitzvah, yadua. So what is the background to this mitzvah? What's the reason behind this mitzvah? So, you know, you could basically say anything. What's the reason behind the mitzvah of Haftar HaKamok? What would you say before you read it? So John, you're disqualified. You already read it. What's the reason for this mitzvah? What would you say? Why is there a mitzvah of Haftarecha Kamocha? Harmony in the community. Yeah. Anything else?
Basically, that's the anchor mitzvah that makes society civil with one another.
Okay, yeah.
It also means more justice. So all the laws that we have in the United States are civil rights laws and are to make life good for everybody.
Right. Okay, so there's peace, there's harmony. Anything else?
There is love. There's love here. But what's interesting, it's benafshecha. It's in your soul. It's not, it has nothing to do with mammon. To me, it says, don't be jealous.
Okay, so there are those who tie this into that the whole mitzvah is to not be jealous. And that's getting to what Dr. Abak pointed before, and we'll see this in the Ramban a little bit later on, not today, in the future shir, is that the whole mitzvah is that if something good, I want good for you. And I want the best for you, just like I want the best for me. And I'm not going to be jealous of you if you get something great just because I don't have it. So there are those that say that. I'm not sure the Sefer HaChinuch is saying that. Okay, so you're right. He gives this sort of explanation of social harmony. So you're going to do something nice for your friend will do nice for you. And there will be peace amongst the people. I don't know, for some reason I feel like there you can give a peace is nice, obviously, and social harmony is nice. I feel like there could be more to it. What?
Food is better.
What?
Food is better.
Food brings people together better than...
No. Make sure that your friend has enough to eat and a place to live.
Right.
And all these kinds of
right. Meaning, so when I care about you, is it because I want a peaceful society? Or is it because I really care about you? So to me, I always look at those as two separate things. That I can care about you regardless of peaceful society. And my goal about caring for you is not necessarily because I want a peaceful society. It's because I actually care about you. So I'm not sure if that's the same thing or not. You could argue with me on that. What? Right. But I'm saying, but is the end goal to have a peaceful society or is the end goal to just care about the other person?
But you can't legislate your emotional feelings to care about somebody.
I reference you back to Shir 1, 2, and 3, where we spent a lot of time talking about that, and according to most, 99% of commentaries, the Torah does legislate emotions. And to the Pasuk sound like, v'ha'af l'recha k'mot, some have a problem with that, and therefore they'll explain v'ha'af doesn't mean emotion, rather it means action. But for most, there could be an emotional commandment there's a negative emotion commandment, don't be jealous of somebody, and there can be a positive emotional commandment of loving somebody. So the Torah, while the United States law might not legislate love or emotions, the Torah does seem to have that power to do so. It's complicated, and again, I reference you back to the first few shiur.
Well, they can hint at it, but they can't force it.
You can't force anything. You could command something, it doesn't mean you could legislate something, and there could be rules so you're right. So in terms of, you can't go to Beis Din and be punished because you didn't love somebody. That's true, but there are a lot of mitzvahs that you can't necessarily be punished for. It doesn't mean there's no commandment to do so. But my broad point here is that you could say this in Sefer HaChinuch sayings if the goal is harmony in society, and maybe that's the same thing as saying I care about you because I care about you. Maybe it's just an extension of that, but I would have liked it to say the purpose of this mitzvah is that we just care about each other.
You say v'halach v'rachav?
For what?
As a source for this mitzvah, that we're supposed to emulate Hashem and loving human beings.
So the connection between v'halach v'rachav kamocha and v'halach v'rachav, following God's ways, is interesting. And can be done in a different, we'll do it at a different time. I think it's a future year coming up. But you're right, you don't need that necessarily. They might go hand, there are some who say that they sort of piggyback on each other and might command different things. That maybe Ba'at Recha does command action while Ba'at Recha goes more on the emotional side. But that could be. We'll do that in a different year.
Is the Sefer HaChinuch extending it in a subtle way to include everybody?
All right, so that's another thing we'll do in a different share. If you notice, the title of the mitzvah is Mitzvah's Avos Yisro, to love Jews. So the question is, are non-Jews included in Ba'at Recha Kamocha? It seems from the statement, no, from his title, no. Whether or not you could explain the pasuk as, right? The question is, what does L'Re'acha mean? What does the word Re'acha mean, your fellow? So there are those that say it means just Jews. There are those that expand it as well. We're going to do that in the future shir. But you're right, it does seem to switch here from Avos Yisrael to Brios. But I'm not sure that's enough to say that that's what he means to include everybody, since the title is Avos Yisrael. But the truth is, I'm not sure about that. I don't know who wrote these titles, to be fair. But in his original statement, it's Lev Kalecha Yisrael Avos Nafesh. So I'm not sure. Yeah.
I'm just saying the prescription is for Jews. The Torah is the obligation for the Am Yisrael, not for the Gentiles. So the obligation to love your neighbor is put on the on, is on the Jews.
But the question is, does neighbor include so we'll get that. That's a different shear. Okay, let's
the point about briot means not only human beings, it can be also animals. So it can be anything.
Okay, well, maybe when we do that, we'll analyze whether or not you have to love an animal or not. What?
I didn't hear what the young lady said.
Brios could mean
any creation.
Any creation.
Anything that's created.
But he ties it to human beings. It's interesting.
Maybe that year when we see who this includes, we'll see if it includes animals as well. That would be a condition. I'm not sure if anybody actually says that. Okay, fine, yeah. Let's keep going. Okay, paragraph C. The dine mitzvah. So now he's switching, he goes from the definition to the reason, now to some of the rules, the laws of this mitzvah. Dine mitzvah zu klulim heim besocha mitzvah, sheklala kolu sheisnaga adam im chavero kamo sheisnagim atzmo. And this is interesting. He's basically saying, the purpose of this mitzvah, it's a broad statement. It's not, I can't give you every single detail about what you should be doing as what's entailed in v'ahavta l'recha kamocha, because it includes everything. All of your interpersonal relationships have to be guided by this mitzvah of v'ahavta l'recha kamocha. Lishmor, as I know, I give you some examples. Lishmor mamono, ulaharfik menekol nezak, to protect his money, to make sure he doesn't have no damages come upon him. Okay, ve'im yisaper alav dvarim yisaperam l'shevach v'yachus al kvodo v'lo yiskabed biklono. So if you're going to talk about somebody, make sure what you talk about him is a praise. You're saying nice things about him, and you're going to care about his honor, and you're not going to get honor by his disgrace. If you get honor based on the disgrace, the embarrassment of your friend, then you have no share in the world to come. And somebody who deals with his friend with love and peace and harmony, and he wants the good for his friend, and he is happy when his friend gets good, as Dr. Abbeback pointed out, that Yisrael is through you, I will be glorified. So here he's mixing in a whole bunch of things. He's mixing in negative stuff, don't harm them. He's mixing in positive stuff, tell good things about them, care about them. He's basically giving you everything. Yet, he hasn't said explicitly yet that I need to go do positive actions to him. He said that if I'm going to speak about him, I should speak positively about him. Do I have to help him with his packages if he's trying to cross the street? And that might be a different
answer.
And I'll think of an example. If, you know, the Rambam says that any gemilos chasadim is tied under the mitzvah of Hatzler Echad Kamocha. We're going to spend a lot of time with this in the future, that any time I do Nicham Avelim or Bikur Cholim, that itself is tied under the rubric of Hatzler Echad Kamocha. So Sefer HaFinuch doesn't say that here. So the question is, again, doing positive, nice actions for somebody seems to be included in the mitzvah. He just doesn't say it explicitly. He seems to focus more on the not hurting. And then he gives this broad statement of Bahamisnai Yimchadeh Derek Ava Vashalom Bereis. If you treat your friend with this love and friendship and peace, so that's if you want what's good for them, that's good. Again, he doesn't explicitly require actions. Okay, keep going. So this is not just when the Beis HaMikdash is around. This is not just for men or for women or for whatever. This is for everybody. But if you violate this prohibition, So what would you say? How do you violate this commandment? So harming somebody. So that's what he says. So again, getting back to our original discussion though, what do you got?
By defense.
Okay. Maybe I don't have to harm. Maybe I just don't love. What if I just don't love him? What if I just don't help him? Isn't that violating the mitzvah as well?
Not helping would be, I think.
Not helping, but I'm not harming him.
Maybe, okay, but it's not indirectly, you know, or, you know, I just don't care about him so much, but I'm not really harming him.
So you're saying that even if you don't consider direct action, you're over?
I'm not saying anything. I'm just saying what he, I'm just highlighting what he's not saying, right? He could have said, had you violated the prohibition by not loving your fellow friend, by not caring about that fellow person, by not speaking nice things about him, by not caring about, but not being happy when he's happy. He could have said that. That's not what he says. He says, "V'noheges mitzvah zu b'chol makom b'chol zman, but over alev lo nizar b'mamon chaderu l'shamram." How do you violate this if you don't, if you're not careful about your friend's money to protect it? V'cholshkenim hizikoso b'mamonot tziro b'shem davar l'das. If you damaged him, of course, or if you caused him any sort of pain, vitel ase. Flip the page. You have thus disobeys this positive precept. Milvad hachiv shebo l'fiyain sheiziko, besides for the fact that you actually have to pay for any damage that you did, as we will explain in a different place. I'm only highlighting this again because it seems like there's this tension running through the Sefer HaChinuch as to what exactly is this mitzvah, how do you do it, and how do you violate it. I would have liked him to say again, if he gave me that the mitzvah is an emotion, as he seemed to have said, abas nafesh, and the mitzvah is to say nice things about your friend, as he mentioned, then violating it would be about not caring about your friend so much, or not saying those nice things about him. Why is violation only by doing damage to him or not protecting his property? So because of this, there are lots of different opinions as to what exactly the Sefer HaChinuch means. If you want to give a summary of what the Sefer HaChinuch means, does he think it's an action? Does he think it's an emotion? Does he think it's both? Does he think it's only doing negative things? He seems to combine them all together, but then somewhat contradict himself at some points if he was trying to give one unified message and one unified theme is what the mitzvah is. And because of that, I have a book here, Shulchan Aruch HaMidos, and he quotes numerous different opinions who fall on all sides of this equation. What does the Sefer HaChinuch hold? Does he hold it's negative? Does he hold it's positive? Does he hold it's both? He happens to think that it's both, only because he says, at least within the essay, at some points he says an emotion. He says positive things. He says also negative things. So you can't take away what he says, even though at other points he's a little bit less clear, and we would have liked him to say you violate this mitzvah by not doing something nice for your friend. Even though he doesn't say that, he does mention that that's part of the mitzvah in other places. Yeah.
On the definition is vague, but on the samples which he gives, the sample says don't harm him. That would be an action. Don't cheat him.
That's a negative action.
Yeah, but
so what about a positive action?
Action oriented.
But again, what about a positive action?
It's more hard to find positive actions, but negative is on the negative side is always action.
So right. So 100%. There's no question that he holds that the mitzvah is don't do a negative action to your friend. At the very least, that's true, because he says that explicitly, and that's how he says you violate the mitzvah, by doing a negative action to your friend. We want to know, does he also include a positive emotion? The only thing he says about positive emotion is that phrase, avas nafesh, which I'm not exactly clear what that means in general, but there is some indication of emotion there. But that's all he mentions it. He never mentions it again. And then, in terms of doing positive action, all he does is give you a few examples in the Dinei HaMitzvos that indicate some level of positive action, but never mentions it in any of the other contexts either. So we would have liked him to just give, again, if you were editing this and you wanted to write a unified statement of what the mitzvah is, I might have done it a little bit differently. And the fact that he doesn't leads to some confusion as to exactly what he means within this mitzvah. Yeah?
I just wanted to mention a footnote for this. When we studied this mitzvah, Rabbi Bornstein asked the following question. He wanted to know, how do we love God? That was Rabbi Bornstein's question. So I don't remember the source, later talking about the source. But the answer that he gave was based on four actions. So the first is Lima Torah, by learning. The second is accepting Yisurim B'Yahava, accepting misfortune graciously. Third was Yaharig B'Al Yahavar. We sacrifice our lives on three cardinal sins. And the last was to be Mekarev Jewish people, to bring Jewish people closer to B'Yahava. So it was interesting that, you know, we spent so much time on how to love your fellow man, and then Rabbi Bornstein asked such a good question with those answers. So it was interesting.
That was to love God.
So at some point in a future shir, we will also we have lots of things. We got a whole list of things we need to do. We are going to discuss loving God as in the context of loving man, whether or not. I mean, if you remember from 2 weeks ago, was it 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, what we did is we went through every single time in the Torah, in the Bereshis, Shmos, and Vayikra Bamidbar, and Devarim, and we listed every time the word Ahava comes up in different contexts. Who remembers what the list was? Yeah. There was, if we find the board, we'll I think it's still up there. Well, there were five contexts of the word Ahava. One was love God, one was love your fellow man, and within man there were sort of subcategories, loving a ger, loving a child, loving, right? And then there was another one of loving objects, loving food was a third category. There was loving God, loving man, loving food. God's love to man was a fourth context. And the fifth context was your... So from the Hatzorecha Kamocha, it seems that you also have this idea of loving yourself. So we had these five different categories, contexts, the word Ahava was used, and what we wanted to know, and we're still working on throughout all of these shiurim, is does it mean the same thing in all contexts? You use the same word love, and we use the same word love in English too, to mean all of these things in these different contexts. Does it require the same thing? Does it mean the same thing? Is it the same emotion? Does it require the same actions? Is the love of God the same as love of man? Right? Is the love that you have for your wife or your husband the same that you have for a child? If you remember the pasuk with the Eved, he says, "Ahavti es Adoni ves Ishti ves Banai." Right? I love my master, my wife, and my child. Is that the same love for all three of those people, or is it not? So when we get to V'ahavta l'recha kamocha and we say, "What does it actually mean?" So we need to know, what does it mean? Does it mean love of God, the same love of God? Does it mean same love as a parent to a child? So that's, again, we don't have a concrete answer to that. We tried to address it a little bit, but what our goal for this whole series is to bring out all of these questions slowly and in different contexts, and hopefully by the end of however long it takes us, when we see all of these different topics in different contexts, we'll be able to look back and perhaps give a better picture of what the mitzvah actually entails. It could be at the end we'll look back and say it's too confusing and there's too many things and there's too many contexts and there's too many different opinions that we can't give a unified answer as to what the mitzvah is, but at least we'll have different levels of that. Yeah.
I think the Sefer Enoch is hardly answered by himself. In the last phrase where it says, Yudu Hadavor V'chol Ben Das, he's saying basically that this mitzvah is relative to each person, depending upon what they understand is what is right and what is wrong. If they do what is right, they are obeying the mitzvah. If they don't, they do what they know is wrong, they're disobeying the mitzvah. And all the examples he gives depends upon each individual person. So there is no specific set of rules, I would guess, based on what he says. It depends upon what I understand. If I know that I'm doing something that is basically not nice, then I'm disobeying the mitzvah. If I see something that I think needs to be done and I do it, I'm okay.
So I agree with you in principle, in the sense that maybe the Sefer HaChinuch is purposefully being vague, and that line is a good line to point out, and we'll get to this in other contexts as well, in terms of that he's saying that this is a general principle that maybe I don't want to give you specific examples of. There are some specific examples that you need to follow, right? So that's what the point that I would say a little bit differently, is that I wouldn't put it into my hands. I mean, there are some basic rules, meaning if it's up to me, and I'm a psychopath, and I think that hurting you is good, that doesn't make it good. So there are some basic rules, and that's what he mentions. Maybe that's the floor that you can't do these things. These things are off the, they're off the table. If you do this, you're violating the mitzvah. Maybe everything above that is up to you. Maybe everything above that is up to the person, in the sense that for different people, the mitzvah will look differently depending on how nice of a person they are, how much time they have, what their opportunities are. Not everybody can go and love everybody else in the world. Maybe for you it's your family. Maybe for you it's specific actions that you could do. So you're right. So maybe there is some subjectivity within this mitzvah, which is something we'll address later on. But I think that's a very good point. I would just add that there seems to be a base floor that you can't violate, that I wouldn't just leave it up to the person. Yeah.
Tell me, on that point, is the possibility that certain things are vague because the Sefer was addressed to teaching the mitzvah to his child? And then so in the context of what a youngster will understand, it may not be the same as I'm explaining to an adult.
I hear. I'm not sure what people say about that. I mean, even though he wrote this for his son and for their friends, so I'm not sure what the, you know, can you say therefore that, you know, every mitzvah we have to look through that prism that he's talking about, that he's talking to kids, and therefore maybe it's a different, it's a different application to adults. I'm not sure that's a fair thing to do. Maybe it is. I don't know. I'm not sure if anybody actually does you've ever come across anything like that in your analysis of the Sefer HaChinuch? Does they address it? I'm not sure. That's an interesting thing to think about. Yeah.
Yeah. What was the age of the song when he was writing?
So I think, I was reading the introduction briefly before. I think he was turning bar mitzvah-ish, so around that age.
Okay, so that his point is well taken, because if he was a young child, bar mitzvah, or less than that, his mentality or his understanding is different than an adult or me.
I agree in principle that it's a possibility. I'm just saying, if you actually read the same, right, you have, I'm not calling him a bad teacher, but you have bad teachers. You could have a teacher who's teaching a ninth grade or an eighth, and we were 13 years old, seventh grade class, who has no idea what a seventh grader knows or doesn't know, and is teaching to his own level. Right, so I wouldn't just say that. Look, he's teaching to a seventh grader, so everything he's saying is only in the context of a seventh grader. I mean, read it. Is this at least for our age? Is this a seventh grade text? No. So I would just be cautious of making that step. Like, oh, this is just for kids. You know, this isn't the little midrash says. That's the point. It's a deep text. There's a lot to analyze, and maybe the seventh graders back then are our age equivalent nowadays, or maybe when he was writing to his son, he wasn't just writing to his son, he was writing to everybody as well. I mean, if he didn't write this, I mean, the kids would be running around in the streets.
My friend is right. It is for the young at heart.
Young at heart. Okay. I hear that.
We all have certain principles that we grew up with since we were 1 year old. We know what to do. We know what is not acceptable in our surroundings. We know that. And when we do something wrong, I know when I do something wrong. You don't have to tell me I know, and I'm the one who has to live with it. It's all within every one of us. No, when we do something wrong, we're doing something wrong. So it's either you recognize it and come out of it, or hide it and keep doing it.
I agree, but one of the things that we're going to get to in future here is, are there any guidelines besides for just, you know, do I know? There's some things we do that we don't think is wrong and may be wrong, either based on Torah sources or based on, other, I mean, if you poll people, I mean, how do you decide what's wrong and what's not wrong? So you take a poll, and if 51% of the people say it's okay, then it's okay. 49 people, even if following your own heart, there's some things that we don't even, it's not even on our radar as being bad, but it might be bad. And it might be a violation of Atzar. I mean, if you look at it from the perspective of don't do to your neighbor what you don't want done to yourself, so you're right. So that does give you some level of, do I like it? Do I know it's wrong? But sometimes we don't even think about what our neighbor's feelings are, in the sense that maybe I don't...
That's what we're learning. That life teaches you.
Right, but I'm saying, so I agree, and that's part of... And sometimes we need some guidance from Bahá'u'lláh HaKamocha sources to get to that, but I wouldn't just say it's like, when I'm 2 years old, I learn all this stuff, and for the rest of my life, if I either violate or don't violate it, based on my own...
Learning. But so by the time you are 14 years old, you already have a base.
You have a base, but, right. But we need to, I think we sometimes need to refresh our base and to re-anchor our base.
Learn.
Yeah, 100%.
It's actually your teachers are too. Watch your journey.
Right? Yeah. Right? Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you guys so much. We mazel tov to the Sefer HaChinuch Siyum group, and everybody's invited back on Monday to do this again with different mitzvos, and you're starting from scratch, right?
Okay. Okay, when do you guys learn? 8:30 to 9:30? 8:30 to 10. So that's on Monday evenings from 8:30 to 10 in the base medrash. The Sefer HaKinuch group will be going through, I don't know if they do it exactly like we did it tonight. Today, is it somewhat different? Depends on
the text.
They go straight to the text. Okay, so everybody's invited to that. And again, I encourage everybody to take this opportunity to commit to some extra level of Talmud Torah, whether or not it's a Sefer HaKinuch group or something else. You see that a commitment for 4 years. What is it? 3.5? 4 years. 4 years to get through all 613 mitzvahs is a gigantic commitment to do that, and it's very impressive that through that consistency of weekly learning that we are able to celebrate the Siyum tonight. Right, and Bob and Jake at the same time have learned Chavrusa Gemara. So whatever it is, a stronger to learn the lesson of the modeling that we're exhibiting today, that we see today, just to commit to ourselves some extra level of Talmud Torah, because even if it takes 4 years, even if it takes a lifetime, every little bit that we learn adds up, and we become better people because of it, and we become smarter people because of it, and we become more committed to Hashem because of it. So I encourage everybody to take a little bit extra in their learning, whether again it's the Sefer HaKinuch share, whether it's learning Gemara or anything else in the Beis Medrash program, whether it's coming to the Sunday morning Beis Medrash program here when we do the Hasidei HaKamocha, or any share in the shul or just independent learning. It's something that we should learn from today. Thank you.